So we do open lines for this last hour, which means you got to grab one of those lines right now. Look forward to finding out where you're going to take us. If you go online at coasttocoastam.com, there are two stories I want to mention now because I had sort of teased that we might have a special guest. We won't be, as it turns out, but we sure tried. First story I want to mention is linked up at our webpage at coasttocoastam.com, and that's the story on the Times Online about the problem with Apollo 13, that research has debunked the long-held theory that had NASA's dramatic rescue plan for Apollo 13 not succeeded in limping the stricken capsule back to Earth in April of 1970, that Apollo 13 would have drifted billions of miles through space as a tomb carrying the frozen bodies of its crew on a never-ending journey. Computer simulations by software experts in Philadelphia now show that lunar gravity would actually have sent the spacecraft and its astronauts into a cremation in the Earth's atmosphere after only 5 weeks. Quote, "For so long it was assumed that Apollo 13 would be an everlasting monument to the space program, just circling forever in space. Now we know it would have been a very different story." That, according to the head of the investigation, the calculations by the Analytical Graphics Inc., begun a decade ago but now published on video to coincide with the 40th anniversary of the mission this weekend, were verified using data provided by one of Apollo 13's flight controllers. Quote, "He had all this stuff in his basement that he came up with, facts and figures of his analysis back then that supported the simulation. Even decades after the event, we gain a new insight into the things that NASA was doing in space. Apollo was such a vast undertaking, so complex, that now there are still so many things for people to analyze with new technology." But that is interesting, because I'd always been told that, that they just would have drifted, you know, sort of frost-covered into perpetuity. Thank God they didn't have to. And then also, speaking of space, here, as we're heading into this last hour of Coast to Coast, there's a story online at coasttocoastam.com, includes a 30-second snippet of video taken with what appears to be a cell phone camera. Not terribly surprising that there should be a short life on the cell phone camera, but it is of a hovering UFO. Over a truck stop off a highway, you can see it if you go to coasttocoastam.com. It's the top story in the news links. And you can see what appears to be two jets scrambling in the background as this UFO just hovers. That's all it does. And then the cell phone camera runs out. There's not a lot here about who took the, you know, the vid and or how it ended up, you know, in the Times Online, and what the story is, and the, you know, what, how this has been authenticated or anything, nothing about it. But Nick Pope was commenting in the story. You know, we always love to have Nick Pope on from England anytime there's a UFO sighting there or something of great relevance. And wouldn't that have been clever if we just spent 3 hours talking about the book Vows of Silence and we could follow it up with a visit from the Pope, Nick Pope even. But alas, we couldn't find him. So that means we just go into open lines and look forward to hearing where you're going to take us coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Let's start with Robert east of the Rockies as we go to open lines on Coast to Coast. Some wildcard lines open, but Robert, you get us started.
Hello. Hi. Listen, I just wanted to say that I'd really appreciate it if y'all could perhaps, you know, one night speak about the Fatima miracle, Our Lady of Fatima, and the message, the third secret.
We talked for years about Fatima. Yeah, I mean, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with Malachi Martin came out, and we talked, when they revealed the Fatima secret, then we talked about that for a long time. What is there anything new about Fatima?
Well, there's quite a few traditional Catholics that, well, they believe that the third secret hasn't been released, and that perhaps this is the reason that there's all these scandals taking place in the church today, and because the church, they believe, disobeyed a direct order from heaven.
I understand that some people believe that, and of course you've heard the Holy Father came out repeatedly and said, no, this is it. And so if there's like a new book, or if there's a new author or something about that on the subject, please send it forward. You know, the rest of it, I think we handled pretty well. And even the very subject of saying, could they have been withholding the actual third secret? And then the church had been experiencing some pushback on that, so that they did try everything they could to verify that. But if there's something new on it, always love to consider that, kind of like how there's something new here with this priest scandal, in that now we're finding more and more about how money was involved in sort of greasing the skids going up. There wasn't just a sense of embarrassment or a sense of propriety or whatever, that there was actual cash being passed along, at least when it comes to the legionaries of Christ. Let me get to John, who's in Cleveland on Coast to Coast. John?
Hey,
open
Ian,
lines.
How you doing? It's a pleasure to talk to you, my friend.
And to you.
I don't normally do this, but the only reason I did was somebody made a comment about the Masonic Lodge and how they're supposedly in cahoots with the Catholic Church. And
it was the other way. It was the other way around. Remember, you were at one point you were forbidden to, you know, from being a Catholic to become a Mason. And that was the comment,
right,
when the woman said her husband was a Mason and a Catholic. And I said, that's not supposed to be going on, right?
Okay, well, yes, that's true. But in fact, I am also a Mason of many degrees, but also a Knight of Columbus. The church has pretty much relaxed those rules because of losing membership. But what I wanted to say was, I find it funny that people who are anti-Masons or Catholics, you know, devout Catholics, they always talk about these oaths that we take and all this other stuff. But when I joined the Masons, I swore on a Bible, took an oath on a Bible of my choice. You can be a Catholic, you can be a Muslim, you can be a whatever faith that, you know, you belong to, but that's what you swear on. But there's nothing in those oaths that you take that, you know, are anything anti-Catholic or against the collective religion or however you want to put it.
I know that there are still some people, and I thank you, John. I'm glad you're at peace with all that. Doesn't bother me any. But I know that there are some places where that is still dramatically frowned upon, to be Masonic and to be a Catholic, because of the idea, the universalism of Masonry, that theologically that stands in contrast with the one whole truly an apostolic church, the belief that many have in the Catholic Church. So you can't have the equality of faiths as proposed by Masonry, or for that matter, the deism of Masonry. Which, again, doesn't bother me that you do both, but that's why I made the comment to that woman about her husband being both, in that in some circles, that's still considered incompatible. Judy is in Houston on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Judy?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
The screener said it would be better for us to change the subject, I guess.
I'd like to.
I know I had my own personal situation when I was a kid with our parish priest ending
right.
up being the father of some children down the street. But anyway,
right.
nonetheless,
yeah.
I called
right.
because I was interested to know if anyone has any updates on that Dr. Simon Cini or Simon Cini from Italy that had been curing cancer with 100 milligram intravenous feeds of bicarbonate of soda to the arterial feeds where the cancer cells or tumors were located, and curing cancer within as little as 7 days.
Hadn't heard an update, but I'd be happy to ask about that and see whether I take a quick look and see whether anything's come along on that. I tend not to believe in cancer cures like that, especially, you know, where people just say it's table salt or something. But gosh, who wouldn't want there to be a simple cure for all cancers. Tom is in Santa Rosa, California, on Coast to Coast. Tom?
Thank you, Ian. Great show.
Thank you.
Part of my question, whole thought process, has been across the board, all these sex scandals we see everywhere, from Tiger Woods to everyone else, and how it's changed from the 1930s to 40s. I mean, in the 30s, Clark Gable did a movie, Gone with the Wind, and they fined him for saying the word damn. And in World War II, the pinup models in a full bathing suit were really racy, and our whole morality has changed so much in these many years so quickly. And I look at the one thing that really seems to match up with it, and it's the toxic chemical exposures, where I found over 90% of Americans have BPA in our system, which is an endocrine disruptor and a neurotoxin.
How do you think that relates to the idea of popular culture?
Your gonads are part of the endocrine system. So the hormones produced, the testosterone, and also some of these chemicals are feminizing men from the hand sanitizers. There's a bunch coming out about that lately.
So you're saying that because our testosterone is going down.
No, the toxic chemicals are messing with our
that's
hormones.
Fine, but hormones, our testosterone is going down. So how does that mean that we would end up having more sex scandals?
Well, see, if that's part of it, it's not necessarily always down. It's what I call the toxic lotto. When you mix all these different toxic chemicals, you don't really know what you're going to get.
Okay, but statistically, we know that it's going down, that the sperm counts among men
are down,
have been going down steadily with every generation. And let's even just go with your theory that this is because of toxic chemicals that are suppressing it, although there are other factors. But let's just say that it's that's the cause. How would it still come out in the form of pedophilia?
Well, it can influence their sexual desires, and the same with all these other, not just the pedophilia, but sexual desires across the board with these different toxic chemicals can do to your hormones. And the Center for Disease Control right now is working on a public forum for people from the general public and scientists and doctors to come together to help discern what the effects of these toxic chemicals are on human health, and that's ongoing right now. And there's people from the Environmental Working Group with it.
That's great. No, I totally get that. I would be, if I were them, I'd be investigating it too. Right. I guess I'm still not seeing how the logic flows that we have more pedophile priests because of toxic chemicals. Especially because we have what seems like, anyway, as you mentioned, a lot of environmental factors that may be involved. It would seem like the feminizing of men, if you want to call it that, would not result in pedophilia. Rosie is in Los Angeles on Coast to Coast and on an open line call. Rosie?
Oh, yes. Hi, Ian. I've got to turn off my speaker. Okay, now you can hear me?
I can hear you beautifully.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I would like to, well, first, I enjoyed that the guy who was the Undertaker for a year, you know.
That, oh, yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
good thinking.
And it reminded me of this, I don't know if you heard the radio and TV show The Life of Riley, and there was Riley, whenever he wanted to vent his troubles or anything, he would run in, there's another character named Digby O'Dell, and he'd got, this is I, Digby O'Dell, the friendly Undertaker. And then Riley would vent his problems and everything, and then Digby O'Dell would give his death jokes and stuff. And then at the end, he'd go, well, so long, I'd better be shoveling on. You know? But anyway.
That's a few years ago.
Yeah, in the 40s and 50s, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I wanted to know about an update. Lily the Bear, has she gotten a name? Her cub got a name yet?
That's a great reminder. I've seen updated photos of Lily and Lily's cub, but I have not. I didn't check to see whether they decided on a name. Last time I looked, the deadline of the contest wasn't over yet, so I should do that. So
because I didn't, I tried to call Mike Gallagher because remember I told you, I thought Lily Denise would be a good name because of his wife Denise died of cancer, and his first grandchild was named. They named her Lily Denise. So, and I tried to call Mike Gallagher and tell him about it. And now it's his 50th birthday. It'd be nice if that could be that name for his birthday. He just turned 50 a couple days ago. So,
we'll have to leave that up to the people that are running the contest. But I will check to see whether that was a winning suggestion. And I appreciate that. And it's nice to hear from you. And it's a sweet thought, no matter what. Robert is in North Dakota, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast. Robert?
Hi, Ian. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are things in NODAC?
Oh, doing good. I'm a truck driver here. I'm hauling coal. I want to give a shout out to all my fellow coal truck drivers here out of Ardoc. Listen, all these earthquakes that we're having here recently, you know, by the way, last night's show was awesome. I got to
give good.
You kudos.
House to house?
Got to give you kudos for that.
Oh,
I'm a former paratrooper myself, and so I want to get that guy's book, and
you
I appreciate the show.
You'll really enjoy it, and boy, wasn't he a great guest. So
yes, he was very good. Anyway, these earthquakes that we're having here, Ian, I'd like your thoughts on this. Now, I have a theory here. You know, we've had earthquakes, recordable earthquakes, since the dawn of time here, since we started recording them anyway. But, you know, here recently, it just seems like they've ramped up to a point to where we're having almost a major earthquake every week, every other week here. And my theory is on that is that it's a warning. It's a warning. You know, Matthew 24, verse 7 talks about all these earthquakes in diverse places or various places, that these are the beginnings of sorrows. And if you add that together with the global picture of the, you know, just everything that's going on with the storms, the economic crisis and all.
Well, why would it be any different? Let me just ask you this. Why would it be any different than, say, when there was a series of earthquakes during World War II? And then you got Hitler, you got the whole world was at war, and there were earthquakes. Why did we not think that that was the end of the world?
Well, I think because, you know, we didn't have so many of them as we are now. This, the sheer numbers of them that we're having here
year. You'd have to show me statistically that we have more. I mean, I understand anecdotally you're paying attention to it, so you notice it more. But I would think there's a set number of earthquakes that probably happen every year and has for a very long time, that one begets another one begets another one. But I go back to, I don't think our times are all that evil. I think we have relatively speaking, mm-hmm. we have world peace. We have conflicts here and there, and no doubt we're still involved in Iraq and Afghanistan. But where is it that you feel like we are in such peril?
Well, I think because it just strikes me odd that we've had so many of them here in a short period of time. Like I said, if you do a timeline and I'm going to do a project here where I can do a timeline and kind of pinpoint where all these, you know, the earthquakes that we've been having. And I think you probably would agree that just about every nation on Earth right now is in some sort of conflict.
Here's what I would agree on. I think they've always been in some kind of conflict. Every nation on the planet has always been in some kind of conflict. There's never a time when we're not in conflict. And we have been in worse conflict in the past. And the reason I'm trying to explore it with you, but that's where I keep coming back to it, because I'm a guy at my, as well as being a person of faith, I'm a student of science. So I'll go look up the certain, you know, how many earthquakes we've had. And I swear we'll come back to, you know, probably like everybody was predicting we're going to have all these hurricanes. They never showed up. I mean, and I think that there's we can attach significance to them, and maybe they'll be right. Heck, you know, we've been wrong for 2,000 years about the end of the world.
Right.
And every prediction every Christian has ever made based on a prophetic, you know, Bible prophecy has been wrong for 2,000 years. We're bound to be right one day. I mean, one day somebody's going to say it and it's going to be true. But why are these circumstances so special?
Well, I think, too, because you got to also put in play there, too. You know, they're talking about this, you know, the talk of the one world government, the biometric ID card, just everything is just so different than it was back then. And
But Revelation, you know, has a very specific idea of what the events are supposed to be that take place before the end of the world. So if we're going to go by the New Testament, those are very specific criteria. They're not vague. They are not general. So if you want to go by that, let's go by that. But That doesn't mean, you know, things like, you know, new developments in biometrics, you know, keep working on that theory and grab an open line call sometime in the future and tell me how there are so many more earthquakes than there have ever been than any other time in history. And we'll get back to that. Chris, Roy, and everybody else who's hanging on for open lines, rest of this half hour, coast to coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, I enjoyed the conversation about earthquakes, whether or not there's some sort of sign of a biblical prophecy, as the caller was saying, that it seemed to him That they're coming at a faster rate, and it indicates it could be, you know, a kind of quickening, if you will, as Art would describe it. So I went and I checked, and just to try to explain it a little bit, there have been years within the last 10 years where there were many, many earthquakes and many deaths. If we go to 2004, so some 6 years ago, there were, let's say, 31,000, well, roughly 31,200 earthquakes, many of which, of course, were of very low magnitude. But two major ones that year, which is unusual, of the highest magnitude of the 8.0 and higher, there were two of them back in 2004, accounting for 284,000 deaths. And that's really the peak year, both before that and after that. Nothing comes close. And to make the point on whether or not they're happening more and they're getting more and more severe, just to use the 2009 data, because 2010 is incomplete, although the one that was off the coast of Chile was considered a very major earthquake, in 2009, the last year we have complete statistics for earthquakes, that year there was only 6,000 earthquakes. So about one-fifth of what it has been in previous years, and only 366 people died from earthquakes, which is an improvement steadily over many years prior. The same thing's true for the 1990s. So, you know, just take a look at that yourself, see if you can find something else. If you really do believe that, it would be reflected in the statistics, I would think. But then you do look at, like, the magnitude of the earthquakes, the top 10 most severe earthquakes, and three of them, of the most severe earthquakes in you know, the last 100 years, have all happened within the last 10, three of them. They're not in the top five, but still significant earthquakes, something to keep an eye on. All right, so open lines. Where do you want to take us? We'll find out coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So everybody that's up on the screen right now, we'll get you in before the top of the hour. Everybody who calls after this, well, we'll see what we can do. Eric is in Lake Hughes, California, on Coast to Coast for open lines. Eric?
Hello, Ian. How are you tonight?
I would. Very well. Thank you. Where do you want to take us?
Never had a chance to talk to you before. I just was listening to your show last week on an infomercials, and which I can appreciate, and there are a lot of charlatans and, you know, people out to make a quick buck, but you did mention in passing, kind of brought Kevin Trudeau into that whole aspect of things. And, you know, I can just personally say that I did, you know, I bought his book, Natural Cures That They Don't Want You to Know About, and I did one of the Candida cleanses that he mentioned in that book. And, you know, before I went to before I started the cleanse, I had fatty liver. I hadn't even been drinking alcohol in like a year or two. I had high blood pressure. I had borderline diabetes. I had cholesterol that was off the charts. And my family doctor said, you know, basically I would put you on cholesterol medication, but I can't with your liver being messed up.
Right.
And so he said, basically, you know, you need to be like a vegetarian. And he made it sound like, you know, I'd be a couple years and it's really hard. And I just walked out of the office with my wife and I just said, hey, let's get a pizza, you know? And it was like, come on, you know? So, but then I went on this program for 4 months, and after I was done, my liver enzymes were normalized, my blood pressure was that of a high school kid again, my cholesterol was back in order, the blood sugar was all normalized, everything was like back to normal. And
Eric, I think that's great, but I'm just going to cut to the chase here and say, you could have gotten all that information on the internet. I went through the exact same thing with my doctor. You can give all the money you want to Kevin Trudeau, but he is a proven, what do I say here? He's one of the few people who the government has actually gone out of his way to actually stop, because the claims he makes are so unsubstantiable. And as a result, I mean, what he does, and this whole thing about the book is very clever. He's a great repackager of other people's information. I'm not saying that it's not good to go on a cleanse, but it's crazy to say that somehow he had this information that nobody else has. Kevin Trudeau doesn't have a lab. Kevin Trudeau's not a doctor. He just took some other information. He slapped it in a book and he had an infomercial and it works really well. But you could get that information anywhere.
But he put it together for everybody in one package, and you could also make a case that maybe they've taken him out of context too. And he did early.
I would not make a case for that. I would really suggest you read the chapter on Kevin Trudeau. I'm taking that through. You want to send the guy your money? Send the guy your money. He's happy to take it offshore. He's happy to do, you know, what he does with all of his money. He knows darn well, as many of these infomercial guys do, that it's a game of numbers. You get the infomercial up and running. You buy as much time as you can, as fast as you can. You get the income coming from it faster than the investigation can be put together that'll shut you down and get you taken off the air. That's it. And as Kevin Trudeau did last time, he was more than happy to hand over to the U.S. government the keys to his house and said, here you go. Because he knew that that was the only property that he had in his name. Nothing else is in his name. And he handed the keys over. He simply went about his merry way with all of the rest of the money. It was a small down payment on his security. Now, again, anybody out there is going to have fans, and I'm sure that there's you. I'm glad you felt better after your cleanse. I did too. I had a fatty liver because I was losing weight and it was not processing fast enough through my liver. So I went on a big cleanse and it detoxed great. And my scores were way up and I got all the information off the internet. Roy is in Memphis on Coast to Coast. First time caller line. Roy. Yeah, Roy.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Where do you want to take us?
First time caller.
Glad to have you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your guest last night, David.
Yeah, David Bellavia, right, house to house. Right.
That was a great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I wanted to make 3 points. Yep. First point being that the young men and women that are serving in this war did not ask for it, but they probably stepped up to the call that yep. once they were called, they stood up and they went.
Yep.
Second of all, we talk about collateral damage and the horrors of that. Well, you know, when 9/11 happened and the World Trade Center got hit, all those people who were in there were collateral damage. Not a one of them were military, not a one of them was strategic for any other reason than it just caused terror. Okay, second of all, you know, it's easy to sit back in an armchair in the comfort of your home when you don't have to duck bullets or dodge bombs and make judgments. Okay, unless you put in that situation, unless you served in a wartime situation where you can relate to what these young men and women are doing, then I don't think you really have a say.
Roy, here's why I have a say. I'm a taxpayer. I got thousands of says. I get thousands of votes. I pay my taxes. I'm a citizen. This is not Rome where you have a warrior class which has more rights than the average citizen. I believe as an American, we are all equal, whether or not you end up serving or not serving. You're still equal, right? You agree with that?
Who's ensuring that you have that right?
No. Stop here. Stop. That does not, okay. our American system is not based on some people have more rights than others, correct?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you.
All right, very good. Well, then as long as we agree, because then that's why we have a right to say it. We all have a
right. You have that right, okay?
Right.
And blood has been spilled to give you that right.
No. Wait. But stop. Let's not confuse the two things. I have the God-given right to have that. That is what the Constitution says. Because I was born, I have that right, correct? I was not given that right by the military. I was not given that
right. Everyone in the world has that right.
Exactly. We are imbued with that from the divine, from the creator.
Most of those people don't have that right because they don't have a government fighting for them to keep that right.
But wait a second. But the bottom line is we have that right because it was given to us by the virtue of our birth. It's not because it was given to me by the military. This is the what you're hitting on right there is the essential case. That's the essential case that's made, you know, by Jack Nicholson on trial in that movie, is that you have rights only because I give them to you. And that's not what our American system is about. And so we have the right and we have the obligation, actually, to say, wait a second, do we want this war? Do we want to support our troops? We want to support the people, but do we want this war? And it isn't just the people who are fighting it who have a right to say whether or not the war will go forward, right?
Well, the people that are fighting it aren't the guys in Washington who are making them be there.
Okay? I understand that, totally. But we can unmake that. We can unmake that, right? We can undecide to make them be there.
You see that happening?
Yeah. Yeah, I see that coming in the next 2 years. There's no point in being in a war in perpetuity. I mean, just to be in a war because we have been in a war never makes sense. I mean,
I don't agree with war, period.
Well, there you go.
Okay, I feel like, you know, if everybody wants to discuss collateral damage and say, I don't want collateral damage, I don't like collateral damage, I don't want innocent people being killed, then everyone in the world needs to stand up against their governments and say no more war.
Well, I'll go with you that way. But just to make the point about collateral damage, I mean, everybody understands that in war there'll be collateral damage. We know that. But the whole point is that you want to minimize it. You don't want to minimize the importance of it. And those are two different things that are at play in the conversation last night. And I'm going to move along. But in the conversation last night, we were talking about the WikiLeaks tape. And I think, you know, we understand collateral damage. The difference is when people are cavalier about it, laughing about it, talking about it like it doesn't matter, that hits at a core of our values. You know, we as Americans, I take so seriously our right to liberty. We believe that it is more, you have to have a higher level of proof to put somebody in jail than you have to take their money, because we think liberty is more important than money. So it's actually easier. You need a lower standard of proof in a civil suit than you do in a criminal suit that reflects our values. So when we see in the case of these helicopter pilots, and to presume that what we see on any of these tapes are true, which is a presumption, that's a little hard to take, to hear them sort of making sport out of the death of people who are unarmed, and or the comments that were coming afterward on certain websites that said, hell, that's what they get for standing on that corner. That's what they get for being on the wrong side. You know, we value life more than that. And at some point, I just think that it's important to stand up and say that. And that's what we did last night. And it was a very lively conversation. And I want to make sure we have enough time to get everybody else in as we're running out. Hey, Pat.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Good to talk to you, Ian. Thank
and
you.
To you.
I just wanted, you asked if there was anything new on the third secret of Fatima, and I just want to tell you.
Yes. Yes. I hate those battery-operated phones. Happens to me all the time. Hi, you're the seventh caller. You just won. What? Chris is in Windsor, California, on Coast to Coast. Chris?
Yes, good evening, or morning, Ian. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. Where do you want to take us?
There was a guy who spoke on the phone asking you about Dr. Simoncini. Is actually the gentleman who talked about a protocol that he came up with. He's an oncologist from Europe, specifically, mm-hmm. I believe it was Germany. I've been in the world of medicine. I started out as an EMT, worked in the MAPA, and worked in some lymphology. Done research for 30 years. I have a father who's also dealing with prostate cancer, so, of course, I did a lot of research in that area, not to mention I lost a cousin from that many years ago. Dr. Simoncini, who became an oncologist, did his internship, got his license and so forth, And when he started doing his surgeries, he came to find that the cancer that he found, which he always saw in pictures as being black, was white. And he was going, well, what is this? Why is it white? I've always seen it black. And he realized that when photos were taken, that it had to have been shadowing. So he did further research and dissected this thing to find out what cancer really was, to understand it and why it was white. What he came to find out was that it was a fungus that thrives upon an acidic environment and basically sugar. As we know, sugar and yeast makes the things we need, like for cakes and what have you. Anyway, getting back to this is he had realized that, again, this was a fungus, and realized the fact that it was basically thriving through, as I said, acidity. That's why Dr. Lorraine Day and others who incidentally...
Lorraine Day. Her. Okay. I'm out.
No. Well, I'm not going with Lorraine Day here, though. I want to spend time here on Dr. Simicini.
We don't have a lot of time because I got to get another caller in, so...
Okay. Well, she wanted to know what the protocol was. Now, I have his DVD, and I've also got his protocol.
Okay. And, well, I imagine people can find it online, can't they?
It's hard to find.
Why?
I don't know. I
mean, if he's curing cancer, and it's as easy as bicarbonate of soda, why don't just put it online?
Well, you know, I think one of the other things is...
they want to make money on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, okay. And this is where I run into this all the time. People want to make money off a cancer cure. If it's bicarbonate of soda, put it up on a website. End of story. Millions of people saved. We'll build a monument in your honor. If he's got it, that's what he ought to do. Instead of selling it, we'll just have to leave it there. But we have time for Gene in Nashville on Coast to Coast. Gene?
Hey, Anna.
Hey.
You had talked about the earthquakes and all, and on the Science Channel, there was a thing that where they had shown the last 100 years and the thing, and you kind of covered that, but they've shown it's gone way up since then. But the other thing that I wanted to cover with you was you made a statement a while ago about that everything is fine, our economy and our all that is going fine. And you, as a seminary person, if you knew anything about prophecy at all, know that it's not fine. We're close to the end on this thing.
Gene, people have been saying that for
Israel.
I understand. I understand that's an opinion that somebody is going to have with every
general.
Wait, Gene. It is an opinion. Gene. It is an opinion. And everybody has a right to that opinion. You have a right to that interpretation. Everybody has a right to keep interpreting it. What I'm saying remains true. No one's been right for the 2,000 years. They keep saying, this is the year. This is the month. This is the day. Somebody will be right someday. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. And I think that there have been many worse times to live on the planet than there are right now. I didn't say everything's fine, like no, there's no improvement. My point is that there are many, many worse times in our history. And I will stand by that. But like I said, you could think different. That's okay too. Deus te amat, and I do too.